Accession number 27460, reel 15.
Mr. Wilkes, reel 15. Oh, you did get leave whilst you were there.
Yes.
Yeah, there was a leave entitlement that you got.
Not that I took much of it. I had 1 week with these people in Kola, and I also took 3 days once after some manoeuvres, because I'd seen some rather nice material when we'd been looking round the shops in Madras. But having no money, I had to wait till we got back to camp to draw some money and then apply for 3 days' leave, which I took, and went to Madras, bought this material and sent it home.
Was there an additional pay allowance for being abroad? Did you get a little bit more money than you would have got in England?
No, a flat rate.
Do you know what you were getting as a bombardier?
Not really. I think it would be either 6 shillings and threepence or 6 shillings and sixpence a day as a full bombardier.
What was the mail situation? Was your mail being censored?
Mail was censored scrupulously. We, first of all, the length of time it took for the mail to go from India to England and for England back to India, that if it went sea mail, it was taking 3 months each way. Then they brought airmail in, which air letter cards, which you could buy and send. These took 10 days each way. That helped things a lot. Kept you all in touch with what was happening back home.
Did you have to pay for the postage, or was it free?
No, we paid for it. Mm-hmm. I think I still have a stamp in my wallet somewhere, left over.
You were there till, I think you said, 1944 in that region.
Yes.
The gold mines.
Whilst we're there, incidentally, the Maharaja of Mysore had a wonderful museum of cars, something in the region of 50 or 60 cars, and he invited the troops down on two occasions, and on neither of them could I get there. I was doing something which couldn't wait on both occasions, but I think the chaps that did go were sorry that I hadn't been able to go.
When did you first realise that you were about to move into the fighting area?
Well, as Christmas approached, Christmas 1943 approached, we were doing all this intensive jungle training, we had a good idea we were going east. Now, at this stage, I remember I was having to make a lot of different signs and things, and I began to feel very, very poorly, and not wanting to appear to be a shirker, I carried on till it was getting a bit late, and when I did go and see my MO, I was put into hospital and spent Christmas in hospital, 1943. That was completely different to Christmas 1942, when the gold mines had invited all the troops, as many as could be spared off the camp, down to this big party. They all got together, and being a teetotaler, I was responsible for getting everyone back home that night. And it was interesting, because a few chaps had a few drinks, but one of the casualties of that night was one of our survey sergeants, a chap that used to go with me visiting friends. If he had 2 pints of beer, he was away to the sports, and someone came and told me the military police had got him arrested. So I went and managed to get him his freedom. I accepted responsibility for him, and we put him into the back of a lorry, and we thought he'd be safe there. And then I'm rounding up the final people to get on the lorry to go home later on, and it was reported that he was missing. He was I think he was still a bombardier at that time. He might have been sergeant. He was a sergeant, yes, I can remember.
What was his name?
Kindon. And he was missing. Oh, I thought, where on earth can he have gone? And in the blackout, you know, went around looking. Anyway, he was found. And where was he? He'd gone from the back of the vehicle to the front of the vehicle to try and be sick. And he'd leaned over. There was a big gap between the load-carrying part of the back of the lorry and the cab, because the spare wheel went at one side and there was a gap the other side. And he was wedged down there. He'd fallen over and he was wedged, and what a job we had to drag him back out. But he was still alive and he weathered the storm all right. So that was Christmas 42.
Did you get typical British Christmas fare for your Christmas dinner?
We did, and incidentally on that occasion headquarters was issued with 7 turkeys and a number of chickens, and no one to kill them. No one knew how. Of course, with my previous experience having the chicken farm, I took over, and I got plenty of helpers to pluck them, and we got all these birds prepared.
And traditional British Army dinner, was it? Officers and NCOs serving the men?
Serving, yes.
Did you have a corporal's, bombardier's mess separate from...
No, we all messed together. Everyone up to the rank of sergeant. There was a separate mess for them.
So now we'll jump forward to Christmas 1943 and your move that's coming up at any time.
Yes, now this was a tragic Christmas. I was put into hospital with dengue fever. That was my complaint. And I think I'd gone in on the Christmas Eve, barely conscious, and I was receiving treatment. That was an occasion on Christmas morning when one of the Indian nurses, this was in the Kola Hospital, which was the civilian hospital, and one of the Indian nurses would shave me, because I think I was so weak, and that I can always remember he had this leopard's claw on his watch chain dangling down. Nice chap. Anyway, Christmas Eve, the troops had been out on the firing range with rifle firing. As the afternoon was getting underway, there was an alert. There was, we did have a cinema in a tent on our campsite, which was shared by ourselves and the York and Lancs regiment, infantry regiment. Now, one of their trucks had knocked down the cinema projectionist, who was an Indian, and he was rushed into the hospital, and the surgeons were working on him to try and save his life. A little bit later, there was another alert. One of our men had been on the range, and his friend had picked up what he thought was an empty rifle and just clicked the trigger and shot his friend through both legs. So he was brought in, and as many troops were lined up outside to give blood transfusions. And this was, what, about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So the doctors had a full-scale job on their hands. So this chap, his name was Walker, Michael Walker, and his friend who had shot him was Paddy... Oh, it's gone. Yes, it might come back. Yes. Anyway, they managed by about 9 o'clock at night to stop the bleeding, and they put him in a cot in a little adjacent bit to our ward, and he was there to be kept quiet. All the surgeons and doctors were absolutely exhausted, and I think they'd gone for a well-earned cup of tea or something, and we were served with our evening meal. And while we were having that, he started coughing badly, and the doctors rushed back and they couldn't stop the bleeding, and he died. So that was that. So later on, it was some time after midnight, I think, when this projectionist died. So Christmas morning, they would bring the projectionist's wife and family, and they came along, very orderly, very quietly. They went along the veranda outside the ward and went along to the morgue, I suppose, to see. By Jove, after he'd been seen, the screaming and yelling and the renting of garments. You hardly believe these things, but it happened. And the wife was there, renting her few clothes that she had. And they took him away on a little two-wheeled horse-drawn cart. And then, of course, there had to be the funeral, which happened on Boxing Day, of Michael Walker.
That military funeral,
was
that?
Oh, yes.
Dengue fever, dengue fever? Dengue fever. How did you come to get that, or what was the cause of it?
I don't know. It's a tropical fever. It's very similar to malaria, and you can die from it. And so that was my first dose of that.
And the treatment in the civilian hospital, was that
good? It was good, yes. Mm-hmm, very good. And, of course, I was agitating. Once I felt better, I wanted to be back out to complete the jobs that were to do. And so, yes, I got out.
How long were you in hospital?
I would say about a week in total. Possibly 6 days.
Oh, so the unit was still in the same area?
Oh, right? Yes, the unit hadn't moved.
Where were the battery units?
They were all on the same area. It was like a huge parade ground, really. One battery here and one battery there, and headquarters down near the gate.
After you returned to the unit, what happened?
Well, it seemed as though it was all packing up and preparing to move at any notice. And we got the orders to move early in January, and that was a long convoy. We were to move to a combined operations camp, and I think it lay between Bombay and Pune, a place called Kumbagan. So, being that the maintenance situation on the vehicles, you could have to change engine oil every 3 days or every 300 miles, whichever came first. So we left Kola, and we would travel 3 days, and then we had a day on what we called maintenance. The oils and everything were changed, and then another 3 days to get to this camp. Now, while we were down at Kola, I forgot to mention, Brigadier Stevens had paid us a few visits. On one of these visits, he called, and his driver was sent down to see me because the staff car that Brigadier Stevens had come in wasn't running very well. It was a Chevrolet, a Canadian Chevrolet. And so I sorted the problem, and it seemed as though he used to time his visits to get a tune-up, and this has occurred. So he sort of vaguely knew me. Anyway, we went up to Kumbagan, and we were there. Brigadier Stevens came round, and he was asking if we were getting plenty of curries, etc., etc. He was talking to us all in the dining tent. And we were supposed to be getting our vehicles waterproofed, so we didn't know what exactly was happening. And then I know I was working on one of these Ford trucks this particular Friday afternoon when the orderly sergeant came along, and he said, what's the state of your vehicles? Well, my vehicles were always virtually ready to roll at any moment because I wouldn't let them get into any other state. But this one, I had the back axle out of it doing a job, but and the time was such that I knew that tomorrow morning I would put the axle back in, and that wouldn't take me long, and every vehicle would be ready for inspection if they wanted to inspect. But anyway, the sergeant told me that every vehicle had to be mobile that night. So instead of getting ready and getting treated with anti-malarial precautions, I set to and put the axle in before I finished.
What were the anti-malarial precautions?
sleeves down. Well, the first thing, as far as I was concerned, I had to get washed and cleaned up. Secondly, the dress, well, you had to put your battle dress blouse on and fasten the sleeves. Your trousers, you have to have full-length trousers on, which, of course, I was wearing while I was working. And apply your anti-malarial cream. And at that stage, we were starting to be issued with Mepocrins.
Was this on a daily basis?
Yes.
As a parade, in effect?
Yes.
A disciplinary thing?
Yes.
Did they have any effect upon you?
Turned you yellow. As far as I was concerned, that was all. But they were a terrible tablet to take. If it happened to melt on your tongue, nearly sent you demented. It was so bitter.
How many would you take in a...
One a day.
One?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And were they effective, do you think?
I think they were, yes. Very few cases of malaria went down. But another funny little twist to all this story about getting ready, after the sergeant had been, our sanitary orderly, who was notorious for spreading gossip and etc., he'd seen the orderly sergeant come, he'd known there was something astir, and he came over to me. And he said, "What's the griff?" Any knowledge? And I said, "Well, what like?" He says, "Well, where are we going? Tell me, tell me." And he was a Carlisle lad, so you can tell he was pretty blunt. So I said, "Well, what do you want to know?" He said, "Well, where are we going?" I said, "Well, don't you know?" He says, "No, come on, tell me." I said, "Mung Dor." He says, "Mung Dor?" He says, "Where's that?" I said, "It's that place in Burma the British just took back off the Japanese last week. And he thought for a minute, "Just get away, you bloody big liar." And I said, "Well, if you don't believe me, wait and see." And that's where we finished up. You should never say anything in jest. You don't want to repeat it.
You had no idea? Just
no, it was just the first name that came off the top of my head. So the following morning we moved out at 4 o'clock. The idea was to travel in the cool of the morning. And once again, the tyres had to be checked every hour. We stopped for 5 minutes. And then we stopped for 20 minutes, I think, after 4 hours. And it was at these halts that I would ride up the convoy and see if any of the drivers had any problems to report. Apart from the odd puncture, the other thing that caused problems was stones flying up, thrown up by the front wheel and hitting the underside of the petrol tanks. Now then, this could have been a longish job if you had to set to, but I had devised a rather quick but crude way to deal with the matter, which worked perfectly well. I would look at the job. If it was a steady drip, 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 then I knew I'd take immediate action. So I would tell the driver to get the brew on, and I would nip back to get the main things that I would need. I carried a toolbox with me all the time, but the soldering iron and blow lamp, etc., I had to get from my main toolbox, which was in the last vehicle. So I would come up and light the blow lamp, and set to and clean off where the leak was on the underside, take the filler cap off the petrol tank and apply plenty of Fluxite, and then when the iron was at the right temperature, a bit of solder on it, I would pop across and put the iron on, and the soldering was done. Funny enough, people used to run away.
I was going to say, pretty dangerous around petrol to have naked flames.
Well, it was. I always used to make sure I was downwind of the leak. We got the thing repaired. On that long journey, which was a 17-day journey across India, I don't know, it might have been 5 or 6 petrol tanks to repair.
And your truck, you were saying, and you travelled at the rear of the convoy.
I rode a motorcycle, but my My main toolkit was in the last vehicle.
Did any vehicles have to be pulled off the road and left because, you know, they weren't going to go any further?
No, no. Everything rolled beautifully. The biggest problem, there was one of the vehicles in one of the batteries, one of the Austins. I don't know how he did it. He managed to have punctures every day in his back wheels. He was getting these blooming synthetic tyres, and of course they weren't the best of things.
And the whole regiment was moving?
The whole regiment, yes.
Was there any order in which the regiment moved?
Yes, regimental headquarters was leading, followed by the two batteries. There's a...
Did each battery have someone of a similar...
Oh, yes.
Working on their trucks?
Oh, yes. The batteries were well equipped. They had so many fitters, and always led by a sergeant and a bombardier. And, of course, headquarters weren't entitled to a sergeant, so I was just the bombardier.
So how long did this journey take? It's quite a long one, you were saying.
17 days. And we travelled to Barrackpore.
And where did you stop at night? Side of the road or what?
Anywhere, yes. The place was always located by a recce party that went out to find a suitable place. Funny enough, when we were at Agra, we were just down the road from the Taj Mahal, but we pulled in the late afternoon and we went out in darkness in the morning, so we never saw the Taj Mahal.
What was the sleeping situation for all of you?
Oh, we just slept beside the vehicles.
In the open?
In the open, either in them or beside them. Now, on this journey, there was one evening as we pulled in to our position. Of course, I was last person in, coming in. The military police followed me in. And, of course, they stopped me, and they were wanting to know about a particular Corporal Atkinson. And so I said, oh, yes, he's with us. He's with headquarters here. I said roughly where he would be. I said their vehicles. I could see some of their vehicles, and because we used to park open order in case of any attack. So the reason for the police wanting him, this chap had suffered a severe loss when we were in South India in Kola. He was from Carlisle, and he and his family were friendly with a bus proprietor in Carlisle. And one day his wife had had their two little girls out in Carlisle when one of the friend's buses came down the road driven by the friend. And the little girl ran out into the road to acknowledge him, and he couldn't stop, and he ran over her and killed her. And this Corporal Atkinson had been... He received the message via the Methodists in South India, so he applied for compassionate leave, and it was now that he got it. The military police said he'd be taken away the following morning to be sent home. So that was that little bit.
It was fortunate in a way, because in some of the theatres you wouldn't have got home.
No. Yeah.
Particularly if you're near the enemy, of course.
Well, then the next thing that happened on this journey was on the last day of the journey, and we were travelling along and we were meeting an American convoy coming in the opposite direction, driven by black drivers who seemed as though they only had one position for the throttle, and that was flat on the floor. These were big six-wheeled vehicles, Studebakers, and they were travelling at 40 miles an hour, hurtling along the road, and, one of them struck our colonel's staff car and wrote it off. Well, it wasn't long before the American officer, who was white, came and saw our colonel. Oh, don't worry, colonel, he says. He said, just get your kit out, he said, and we'll have another vehicle for you in no time. The colonel replied that we needed an accident report form filled in. To which he replied, "And that's why you bloody limeys are losing this bloody war." But anyway, our colonel kept his cool and put him in his place, according to the colonel's driver.
Who was colonel at this time?
I can't just remember his name. I know he was a territorial colonel who had replaced the second colonel that we had in South India. He wasn't to last with us much longer anyway, regrettably. Anyway, we got into Barrackpore, and then we were instructed we had to burn all letters, anything with addresses on, anything that could identify us. We could send certain stuff back to what they called a go-down in Calcutta, and we were not allowed to take a camera with us into action, so my little box brownie went that way as well, to the go-down, along with lots of other things. Quite honestly, I didn't expect to see my kit again, but I did, when we were coming home.
A go-down is a like storage warehouse.
Like a cellar under, yes. Mm.
What was the reasoning behind that, taking everything away from you?
Well, you had to take nothing into action that from which you could be identified. I think at that stage we were still losing the war, weren't we? And they could apply anything to anything.
Had you had updated vehicles whilst you were in India? Did they come along?
No, not at this stage, because we had all brand new to come away with from England. But this was now, things were going to change a bit, because we got into Barrackpore and they took our Dodge pickup trucks off us. They were Canadian Dodge, and they issued us with American Dodge 1500 weights to replace them. Now, these were well equipped with a winch on the front, four-wheel drive optional, and they were very useful. And those replaced our Dodges.
Were they as good a vehicle as the
every bit,
Dodges?
Every bit, coupled with the fact that the Dodges that we'd brought up from South India with us were now on tyres that weren't the right size, so they were over-geared, and they were travelling, but you were having to run a lot in the lower gears to keep going.
And you said this was the time of change. You were about to
yes.
move forward.
Now, at Barrackpore, the guns were sent by rail round to Chittagong, and the rest of the lot of the vehicles, I can't say exactly how many, but the three tonners were among them, and we put those, well, I spent my second wedding anniversary loading these lorries into the hold of the SS Icona. We were only allowed to load four, because the heat down in the hold was so great that you were passing out by the time you came up to the surface again. And when you came up to deck level, it felt quite cool. And so there was a team of us, as one did a bit of parking, another one took over. And so we sailed on the SS Icona across to Chittagong.
What date would this be?
Well, probably the 22nd, 23rd of February. And we had a lot of African troops on board with us. And we got across to Chittagong, and then it was a case of unloading. And as we took the vehicles off the ship, we had to park them in a park just up from the docks, really, till we got some drivers to come and drive them. And then we went to a rendezvous, and there we got sorted out with any kit that we were deficient of. We were made up, and we had a storekeeper who had to be watched. I know in South India I'd had to pay for a couple of tools that had gone missing, and you didn't pay once, you paid three times. You paid once to replace it, and once for the one you'd lost, and one for the trouble. So,
and this was a personal payment, was it, from your own money?
Oh yes. So he was dishing tools out that he'd been picking up from different people, and I got a couple of bars. I said, "You beggar," I said, "I've paid for these." one was a spanner, the other was a set of feeler gauges. And you see, I might be working on one front wheel, and I'd leave my tools on a cloth laid out. I used to lay them out so that I could count them out and count them in to my toolbox. And if he'd been around, you could be sure something might be missing unless I'd caught him at it. So I got them back, but I'd paid for them, so they were really mine. So we moved out of there up towards the front. We're now on the Arakan.
Were you still part of this combined operations brigade?
33rd Corps was always a combined operations corps. We were still 33rd Corps.
Corps, yeah.
So we moved up to what we called B Echelon, which would be our B Echelon. That was where we would be based, and anything that was broken down would come back to for major repairs, or repairs that could be done within the specified time that we were allowed to work to.